And it's good afternoon. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much. Not too bad at all. We're back. It's Thursday. Happy Leap Day to everybody who's watching live right now. February 29th, as it is right now. Ken Carson will be happy in 10, 9, 8, 7. Hey, Ken. Countdown was on. Thank you for tuning in, everybody, across the web. And thank you for watching if you're watching on the repeat show. We are here. What else have we got? What we've got to talk about before the show starts in? I honestly didn't rehearse anything today. But let's go on off the cuff here, David.
What do we have to talk about? Let's see. Folk Alliance was last week. Anybody went to that, let us know. And it's festival season. Will be gearing up soon. We'll be heading out to Merlefest in April. So yep. Anybody heading there, be sure to come say hello to us. And
you're working on a lovely festival lineup calendar for the website.
Yeah, right? Working on that right now. Yeah.
Well, not right now. I hope we've got a show to do. but hopefully we'll have a whole thing. With lists of festivals to check out, ones that we're going to be at, and ones that we're involved with throughout the year and beyond. I think my first one will be Merlefest in a month or two, which has got one awesome lineup going on. So looking forward to that. You will be at Rocky Grass, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really finalized that detail. But Grass Valley, Winfield, IBMA, others. So Brent was at Folk Alliance. Brent, leave a note in the chat. Was it good? Did you have a good time? What was your favorite part? Let us know. We're intrigued. So Brent Davis. All right. Should we crack on? Because we got a good friend of ours today. We already know Mr. Bennett Sullivan, who's going to come and join us today. We're going to be talking about bluegrass licks and beyond. He's going to be talking about his style, his composition techniques, but also his new platform, Daily Banjo Licks, that we've been partnering with. And we're going to go through a whole host of things, including finger picks, but lots of things to talk about. So let's bring him in, Mr. Bennett Sullivan. Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Hey, everybody. It's going well. Hope you are, too.
We're doing pretty well, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is, where are you at? Second appearance on Daring Live now?
This is number two. Yes.
How does that feel? Is that second appearance?
It was exciting. Yeah.
As exciting as the first?
I feel like I'm a little nervous this time. I don't think I was very nervous last time. But yeah, you're keeping me...
keep you on edge.
Yeah, keep me on edge. No, but it's good. I always love hanging out with you guys, and it's fun to be playing one of these Hartford banjos, and I'm excited to share some tones from it today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, why don't we get a taste of that right off the bat, as we do. Let's have you play a little something for us and see how she sounds, and then we'll let Dave get on with the proceedings. How's that?
That sounds great.
Awesome. Sure. Let's do it. What are you going to play for us, Bennett?
Well, this one's not titled yet. I'm still kind of in the process of writing it. I've been writing a lot of new music lately, and most of it's not finished. I'll write a piece of something, and then I'll write another piece of something else and kind of work on them, you know, when I feel like I should. So this one, I don't have a title. So if anybody has any feelings or visions, I'd love to hear it in the chat box.
There you go. There's a little challenge for you viewers out there. Leave a comment for a title for one of Bennett's new tracks in the comment section.
Yeah.
Let's hear it. Let's see what we do.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Getting out there, getting in it.
Yeah, that sounded great, Bennett.
Thank you.
Really
Thanks.
Good.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was writing some notes as you were playing it.
All right.
And it's just like one thing I wanted to ask is how do you write, if writing like a clawhammer piece versus a three-finger piece, how does that differ?
Ooh. Well, that's a good question. I don't know if I have a good answer for that, because I was working on this exact same piece in like three finger style yesterday.
Okay.
So I was like kind of feeling it out, and I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. And I really like the way it sounds clawhammer. I don't know if I really have a concrete way of approaching it. It's not different. I don't think it's different, my approach. I'm still thinking in sections, you know. It's still like, okay, here's a section. Okay, I like that A section, but maybe I want to tweak the second part of that A section and make it transition into this other part. Or in this composition, it's, you know, the first phrase. And then it has this little ending part. And it ends on the C note, the home key. And then I repeat that. It's a pretty simple thing. But you know, in the B section, I was like, I really want a key change there, because we're in the key of C in that A section.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, I want it to almost be like a abrupt sounding key change, but it's kind of a bluesy song, so it works to move to that A flat chord. That's the first chord of the B section. Mm-hmm. And then it goes to E flat. So it's almost like in the key of E flat now, which is a minor third away from C. So, you know, that's not a big, you know, change, I guess. In bluegrass, maybe it is, but you hear that in bluegrass. You know, you'll hear like maybe Cheyenne, I think, does that. It's in G minor and it goes to B flat. So the opposite of what I'm saying. But anyways, yeah. So I got that. You know, I could have done that again. But I wanted to do something different there. So I was like. And then like kind of hint at the C major again. I don't know. It's just messing
around.
Yeah,
like how did you resolve it back into, you know, get it back into the C major? What was that last chord?
Yeah, it was just F minor. E flat, and then C major seventh.
Okay.
Right. And it's not theoretically, like I could go to like the five of the C, and that would make, you know, if I went to a G chord, and a G chord happens, it creates tension to move you back to the C chord. But I don't know. I like that.
Too literal. That gives
it's a little bit too literal. Exactly. Yeah. I like the, and especially that major seventh with the oops, sorry, that was loud. The C and the B. Kind of ringing together like a major seventh apart.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, it's a lot of, you know, this is an in process tune. So, like that third section, I wrote that like literally before we got on this thing today. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. And in my head, like while I was playing it, all right, am I going to do this? Am I going to do this? All right, I'm going for it. I like that. It's like a very classical, like kind of sounding mm-hmm. thing. And that has like a D seventh in it, and then a G augmented. And I'm in double C right now, which is really fun for all these chords. Like in you know, bluegrass, that's like our G chord
right.
for like G tuning. You know, we play that and we're playing like a straight up G triad.
Sure.
But in double C. It's an augmented seventh chord. So it's, I don't know. It was that discovery was kind of cool.
That's, I didn't know. I didn't never realize that either. That's a good one I got. So the form of it is three sections plus that intro.
There's a little intro there. Yeah.
Right. And your finger picking there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that just
nice
feels better.
Contrast.
Yeah. Cause I could go, I don't know how I do it, but it feels good to have it kind of vibing on that like C seventh sus chord, and then
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's all pieces right now. Like, I don't really know what it's going to turn into.
It sounds like you're there.
Like a fully fledged piece of music. I don't know. Yeah.
And what was the form? Do you have the form clearly defined? Like, or were you kind of winging it? Cause it's still kind of,
I was kind of winging it. It has the intro and then I go A, B, C and then A, B outro ending.
Okay.
That's kind of what I was
like an interlude. You aren't really, you don't go back to it.
Yeah. Maybe it'll happen twice in the song. I don't know. We'll see. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see if anybody's got some names in. I'm looking in the chat real fast, see if anybody came up with some great names. I don't think I see any. Well, anybody.
Okay.
We're waiting. and how, when you're writing, how do you get out of doing like your cliche little licks and everything that you've done in everywhere else? Like, how do you break out of that thing and kind of come up with something that's fresh and doesn't just sound like banjo lick tune?
Yeah. That's a good question too. Sometimes I'll let myself do it in the initial writing process. Like I'll try to just kind of go stream of consciousness. I'm just writing this. I'll record it on my voice memos on my phone and just go into it. And that's like my creative, creative mode. And then after the fact, I'll go back, listen to it, be like, all right, well, that's a little bit too, like, I don't know if, too licky in that part. There's too many cliches. Right. I do that all the time. Or like, I've heard someone else do that. Like, I want to do something a little bit different, even if it's just tweaking a couple notes. Mm-hmm. But that was something that, I got to hang with Bela Fleck once and I talked to him about composition because he's obviously a master and he's incredible at it. And he was like, I have two modes. I have creative mode and I have editing mode. Mm-hmm. And I don't let them get mixed up. Like, I have creative mode where I'm just letting myself go, letting myself write. Stream of consciousness, there's not any editing happening. It's just writing, pure writing. No judgment, just there, putting it out there. And then I go back when I feel like it's time to edit. I'll go back, listen to it, take stuff out, add stuff, editing mode. And I took that and I'm like, man, that's really cool to have it split up like that. Because if you're trying to do the editing at the same time, it gets really difficult to get in the flow. You know, mm-hmm. you get like, I usually get frustrated or I'm judging myself too hard and I'm like, why am I even doing this? Yeah. And I'll like stop. But if you just let it go and keep that flow going, it's really you can get to some cool places for sure.
Right. And when you get into editing mode, do you ever like write it out? Do you ever like tab things out and then so you can visually see it and then like edit that way? Or are you strictly editing on the instrument?
I like writing standard notation too. I'll write standard notation of things. Cause if I want to put it on a different instrument, then I can easily do that. But usually it's on the instrument and I'm working with voice memos or in Logic Pro, which is a audio software. And I'll edit, I'll cut stuff and copy and drag it and paste it and try to create like a different form. And make some loops sometimes. It's a tedious process, but in the end it's pretty cool what you get out of it.
Yeah. You also strummed a fair amount in this, you play strummed a fair amount of chords.
Oh yeah. Sure.
So do you sometimes I think when I do that, when I go into that mode, that I'm kind of almost cheating, like by especially because I play 4-string banjo too. Right. So I'm like, I'm used to doing a lot of strumming.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know why that gets in my head, but, do you feel anything like that? I'm not doing enough like classic, like drop thumbing or something like that.
Yeah, totally. But I imagine that, that's got a lot of drop thumb in it in that A section. Uh-huh. But when I go to the B section, yeah, I'm strumming these chords because I really want to give the context of the melody. I don't have another player playing with me. Like if I had a guitar player playing with me or mandolin player, anybody, another banjo player, they would be able to give the context for the melody. You know, they'd be able to play the chords. Because I could play the melody. Or... But you could do you know, and then you're like, okay, well, it's open C the whole time. You don't have the context. But if you have that A flat in there, it's very obvious, like the harmony and like kind of like the vibe of that section. But you know, ideally I would like maybe orchestrate this a little bit more and put, you know, the melody on a mandolin player would play that, or a fiddle player. Do, 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 do. You know, and they could improvise around it.
Yeah. And I think that the good thing that I've seen too is, right, you're doing is you're singing the melody. I see that you can find the melody. A lot of people have trouble, especially on banjo, I think, finding what the actual melody is. I know when students and like say, we'll sing the melody of Cripple Creek or something.
Oh man, that's like one of the number one things I do in lessons as I work with people on melody. And Jens was a big inspiration and guide for me in my compositional process when I was working. I was writing all these really notey compositions, and he was like, "What's the melody? Like, what do you see? What?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know. It's just I'm playing banjo, and it's cool sounding,
right?"
And he was like, "No, it needs to be simple, and it needs to be something that people can sing." And that really like stuck with me, because you know all these popular melodies that we love, you know, all the jam standards, "Will the Circle Be Unbroken," "You Are My Sunshine." we have a little inside joke about "You Are My Sunshine."
I think one of us likes it more than the other.
I love that song. All these, you know, bluegrass standards, they are singable melodies, and that's a huge reason why we love them. It's probably the main reason why everybody loves these songs, is that they have these singable melodies that just uplift you. And and so, you know, when I'm teaching a lesson, I'm like, well, okay, you can play like this break that you learned, you know, downloading the tab from wherever, but what's the melody for "Will the Circle Be Unbroken?" You know? And can you sing it? And I put them in that uncomfortable situation of being like, well, I don't want to sing in front of you. And I'm like, I don't care how you sound. I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to help you through this, you know, and you got to learn how to sing that melody, because once you have that melody down, then you can build on top of that. And that's the foundation.
Yeah.
And I think once people kind of understand that and start using their ears to figure out the melodies for these songs, just a simple bare bones melody. I'm double C right now, so I'm not going to show you, but just a simple melody, then, you know, that opens up a whole world, and you get better and better at that every single time you learn a song. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, the melody is that's the king right there. King or queen, whatever.
We have a name for your tune from Michael York. I think it's pretty good. Sullivan's Trail.
Oh, Sullivan's Trail. I like that.
Let's see. We have a question in here from Banjo Dan, saying, "I wonder if Bennett could share the setup he uses to produce them." I see where he's going. To produce the, let's get into that a little later, actually, or to produce your licks for Daily Banjo Licks.
Oh, behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes.
All right, Banjo Dan.
Some technical.
We can do that.
Well, we just mentioned Daily Banjo Licks. Let's talk about what this is. You're a great teacher. You've done a lot of teaching, and you've launched this new platform that gives people banjo licks in their inbox. So tell them what it actually is, you know, in depth.
Right. So I came up with this idea about 6 months ago, I think I came about it after I wrote this email to my mailing list, and then I went on a hike, and I was like, man, that would be really fun. It would be kind of a good challenge for me to email someone, email a group of people a lick every day. And so I wanted to make like a really fun learning experience that was inspiring and creative and not super, you can learn songs everywhere. You know, there's songs on YouTube, endless amounts of tablature everywhere on the internet. I wanted to do something a little different and focus on kind of the building blocks of bluegrass language and of the bluegrass language. And so, I've always liked licks and coming up with my own licks and learning other people's stuff. And so I said, okay, well, maybe I'll try this daily thing for a while and post it on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. And so I started doing that and started making the licks, in batches, doing five at a time in a recording session and recording guitar backing tracks to it and sending them out there on the interwebs and see if people liked it. And, the whole concept is that you're not just learning the lick, but you're learning how to use it in the context of a song. That's really important. And so in every single video, you know, if you go to YouTube, you'll see a song being played with the lick in that song. And on the website, the actual website, banjolicks.com, you get multiple songs with that lick being played in there. And I'm also a really big fan of learning by ear. And although the tab is available for all the licks on the site, I play the lick super slow so you can hear every single note, and I loop it so you can practice along once you get the lick down. And I think that's a really important part of learning. Excuse me. And so I don't know, it's just been this really fun project, and I've enjoyed it a lot. I've enjoyed it for where I'm at right now in my life and teaching and performing and composing. It's a really nice thing, a really nice avenue to go down for teaching. Because I have some private students, but I really enjoy connecting with big groups of people and sharing, you know, whatever wisdom I've gained over the years on platforms like YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and ultimately banjolicks.com. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's done really well. I haven't done it every day, but I've done some of the licks, and you know, it's broken down very clearly, and they're hip. Like, it's not, all things that I was like, well, I basically kind of got that already. Like, I might be like 90% there, like this lick. So they're cool, and they're in context of tunes that, you know, most bluegrass banjo players play all the time.
Yeah, you go to a jam session, you'll hear John Hardy and Sitting on Top of the World and 9-Pound Hammer, and all that stuff is on there. I've tried to make the quality really good as far as the licks are concerned, because it's important, you know, for people that, you know, you sound... I think ultimately people want to sound really good, and they want to sound like they know the bluegrass language, and that's important. So I've tried to really focus on that. And yeah, a lot of the licks are like kind of my own creations, but you know, mm-hmm. I've taken from JD, I've taken from Earl, Bela, like I've taken from all these musicians that are my influences. And so their vocabulary probably pops up a lot in the licks that I'm posting on there. But I also feature like specific JD Crow licks or specific Earl. I did a Don Reno week, which was really fun. And then people request like whatever songs they want, whatever musicians they want to hear licks from. So, it's like this kind of like endless well. There's like endless possibilities for this thing, and I'm really pumped about that.
And so, how do you suggest the user gets these into their playing? So you know, you learn it, and it doesn't just evaporate. You know, then tomorrow you're like, what did I just kind of spend? You know, half an hour learning.
Sure.
What's your suggestion there? And maybe do you want to like show us?
Yeah.
Show us one and show us one in context.
I'll show the process because that's really important. That's like almost the most important step. It's like when you learn a lick, you need to know what chord it's being played over kind of where it's going, what chord is being changed, what the chord progression is. So these are important things for learning the lick. So, you know, I'll take this J.D. Crowe lick, for example. It's over a C chord if we're in the key of G. And so, you know, I learned that from one of his, I can't remember what song he did it in. I can't remember what song, but it's this J.D. Crowe lick, and, you know, it starts on the C chord. And you're just walking up. You're going from that C chord, and you can do it like that too if you want with your ring finger. But and then forward roll, and you're switching to the, you know, third fret, second string, and first string. And then going up two frets from that, still in that same shape. And then going to that forward roll again, backing that position up to the third fret. You know, on the website, I'll play it really slow so everybody can play along. And you might, you know, everybody might want to, you know, go back and learn this if they want to. You know, but once you learn that lick, then you're like, okay, cool. I got that lick down. That's the first step of the process. Get the lick down, practice with the metronome, make sure it's really smooth and easy to play. You want to get to the point where it actually feels really easy. You can pick up the banjo and go. Not super fast necessarily, but just easy. I messed it up there because I was thinking about what I was going to say. But now you're like, okay, what song should this go in? And what I've done is I've put recommended songs underneath the lick videos. So I can show you where the lick actually happens in those songs. Okay. And this lick actually is very versatile. And so I think I did John Hardy. So like that's a really good one for this. Anyways, you can see where I put it in there. And a great way to practice this lick in John Hardy is to do it on every single C chord. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it all, doing that all the time, but just for practice purposes to get it in there. And so on and so forth. So that's one of the examples. And, you know, I would, you know, find that spot where you want to play that lick and slow, you know, I preach like playing really, really slow with the metronome. So, you know, when I'm playing this song, I'll try to put the metronome, I'll put the metronome on around 80 beats per minute and I'll play. Spot. I'll be very specific about where that lick is supposed to go in the song. I like kind of create an arrangement out of it at first. And the more you do that and the more you put it into different songs, then it's going to become more of a second nature thing. And you'll know, you'll just intuitively know at the jam or at the show where it's supposed to go, where this lick could go. So another example is like 9 Pound Hammer. That's a really good one because it works in a space that we use a lot in bluegrass. It's that like 2 measure space for C chord. And if, you know, knowing it's 2 measures or 4 measures or whatever isn't really important. You want to know, you just want to feel it, you know, and that's what it does when you're messing around with putting it in different songs. That's essentially what you're doing. Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Will the circle be?
That's right.
That melody.
Yeah.
Get the melody in your head first.
It's a good exercise to do it while you're playing the melody clearly and then jump into the lick and then jump exactly. back to the melody.
Exactly. And that's what the slow thing is all about too, because it's really hard to do it like at speed of the song. Uh-huh. Right. So when you're practicing, slow it way down so you can really think about it and your fingers can kind of go through the roll patterns and you can leave a little bit of space before the lick maybe. And just put it in there. It's okay to like leave a little pause before you put the lick in. And the melodies are really, really important too. Yeah. So that's basically the process is learn that lick, practice it really slow. So it feels second nature. And then with a really slow melody like John Hardy or Will the Circle Be Unbroken, any of your jam tunes that you want to try out that you know has a four chord in it for this lick specifically, try it in those songs really slow with the metronome. And then as you feel more comfortable with it, once you know you got it locked in, then you can speed up the metronome and get it more up to speed.
Do you ever try, like you just mentioned it being on a four chord, let's say do you ever try to take that same lick, it'd be different fingering, but like put it on a four chord in a different key without using a capo?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like in, you know, say you're playing, you're playing in C or something, and then you need to turn that C lick into an F lick, but it's essentially the same thing. But
let's try that. So, and I've got a couple of those on the site, but yeah, I mean, you could even do one of my favorites to do is Dark Hollow, because it's got a cool chord progression. So I was able to do it in both C and an F. But essentially, yeah, I mean that's the pattern. It's once you figure out that pattern too, it's a great thing to go and put it into another key. Uh-huh. And then you just move that position up to your F position out of this. And then you could do it in G too. Yeah, I mean that's a great one for all those positions. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah, that sort of things often makes me understand how it's working when I do something like that. Like as opposed to just memorizing the numbers,
I start to
it's doing this shape, or it's doing this like this harmonic thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So like the like bullet point things to get this into your playing would be what?
Bullet points are first, learn the lick, preferably by ear. Practice on loop with the metronome. Get that lick down under your fingers so it feels second nature. Take a song, one of the recommended songs on Daily Banjo Licks, or one that you know that you think the lick will work in. I think this one's titled like J.D. Crow four chord lick for John Hardy or something like that. So, you know, it's over the four chord. So you could say, okay, well, you know, I know, Will the Circle Be Unbroken has a four chord, or, Fireball Mail wouldn't work. You know, Fireball Mail does not have a four chord in it. So that would be one that you wouldn't use this lick in. 9 Pound Hammer, My Walking Shoes, Hand Me Down My Walking Cane, all that stuff, all those it could work in. And so you can make a list, or you can just go through, you know, songs that you think it would work in and try to stick it in the song, you know, at a slow tempo. And this is requiring a little bit of, if you are like stuck on tab, or if you have a tab arrangement memorized, it may be difficult to actually like, you know, do this process, because it's going to require you to kind of, it's going to require you to understand where you are in the song and what the chords are and stuff. So, I'm not saying it's not possible. It's definitely possible. But in my experience working with people who are like kind of using tab as a crutch, I have to break things down for them and say, this is the melody. You got to learn the melody now. And once you learn the melody, then you can, you know, build up your own version. For example, let's just take Will the Circle Be Unbroken. This is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
Did you take Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And you just learn the basic melody. can sing it out loud. And you repeat that, and you play that with the metronome. You get that melody down as if you were singing it, but you know, your voice and your ears, and the banjo is just an extension of your body and what you're hearing. So if you can hear something and sing it out loud, then you can put it on your instrument. And that's something you should practice when you're learning these standard songs. I know it's cool to play you know, all that stuff is really fun and fancy sounding, but I can only do that because I know the melody and I have awareness of what the melody is and what mm-hmm. chords are happening during that melody. So that's like first step, is like learn that melody basic. And then with the metronome, try to throw in some roll patterns after you've like practiced that melody for a solid like 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Like, don't rush the process. That's really important, is you take your time and really, really, really know the melody. And so I'm going to throw some patterns in there. It's not going to be like, I'm doing a forward roll here, I'm doing an alternating thumb roll here. I'm just kind of making up like fills to fill the space in between the melody notes. So it sounds like this. It can be sparse, you know, it doesn't have to be as filled in as I just did it.
Yeah, you don't have to keep an eighth note going constantly.
No, I'll play like another example. That's a really, really nice way to play Will the Circle Be Unbroken. Like if I heard someone at a jam session do that, like really good time, bringing out the melody, not playing a bunch of crazy fast stuff out of time, I would be like, man, you're doing great. Yeah. Like you're right on the right path. And then, you know, that's step two, is add those rolls in there as those like kind of fill spots in there. And then what you want to do is start to add in some slurs. And I think once you get to that step, then you got to say, all right, I've learned this melody pretty well and I can play it with slurs. Now, I kind of want to know what Alan O'Brien does on this, or J.D. Crow, or Sammy Sheeler. Mm-hmm. Like, try to dig up some versions of this song of these professional players playing Will the Circle Be Unbroken, and try to steal what they're doing from it. Borrow, steal, whatever you want to call it, but you want to take what you can from these masters and instill it into your own playing. If you really are drawn to somebody, go there with them and learn, you know. And that's the way I did it, you know, is I would listen to records over and over again, and I'm lucky because my son is into bluegrass. He's been really into for a while he was into only AC/DC. I like AC/DC too. I love it. But we've got this drum set back here and he would just bang the Jesus out of it. And I'm learning pedal steel. So I was like playing, you know, Thunderstruck on pedal steel and he was wailing away on the drums. It was awesome. But we've been listening to Jerry Douglas's Slide Rule record, which is an incredible, incredible record. There's some amazing cuts on that, but they have a cut with Tim O'Brien and Jerry playing Hey Joe, and Milo's really into that. My son's really into that. And where was I going with this?
Stealing from people.
Oh yeah. And just this morning I was learning Jerry Douglas's solo. I was like, so he's playing over this chord progression. It's really cool. Hey Joe, I am in your hand. You know, they play it in the key of B, and the chords are G, D, A, E, back to B.
Okay.
And you know, Jerry's, it sounds like he's playing it in open tuning, and so I was like, all right, and they're playing it really fast too. It's like 135 or something like that. And that Shenandoah breakdown on that record is 175. I clocked it this morning, so that's crazy. But 135, I was like, okay, well, let me see if I can cop some licks from this. And I started learning some of Jerry's solo from it. I was like, oh man, this is fun. It was at the breakfast table. My son was there, like listening and kind of singing along. And I was like, this is cool. I really like this. But yeah, I mean, I'm still doing it. I'm still learning licks and still learning phrasing and lots of stuff from records. I mean, we have access to everything right now. So yeah.
Part of the problem is we have access to everything. Yeah. So like slowing down and listening to one track over and over, and then not even the whole track, listen to, because if you said, you know, Will the Sucker Being Broken, and they're just getting out of, you know, playing the melody and a few basic roles, maybe they want to get a lick in there. They need to listen like a section, probably, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, wait, what's he doing on the C chord?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. We do have access to like, we do have access to everything, and it can be hard to pick and choose and slow down enough to like, you know, really, really play slow with a metronome, and really like pick out that one lick, like what is he doing there, and loop it over and over again. But that's what everybody that you respect and admire, they have all done that. And they've all slowed down, played with a metronome slow, got it super clean, and then you move it up, all that stuff.
And for transcribing, I use an app on the phone, Amazing Slowdowner.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the challenge of doing it fast.
So. Banjo's hard real time.
Oh, it's so hard.
There's a lot of little stuff you can like miss.
Oh, there's a lot of little stuff you can miss. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's still fun, even if you miss a couple notes.
Let's see. We have a question from Scott Seaman.
Oh, saying, yeah. Hey, Scott.
Would you ask Bennett about his smoothness, efficiency of left hand positioning movement, and how this can improve playing quality?
Oh. Yeah. So, hey, Scott, glad you're here. So I studied classical guitar when I was in high school, and my classical guitar teacher was like, got to get your left hand. He was all about left hand. He was all about technique in general, like right hand, left hand. And I really focused in on left hand technique. I posted a video with some exercises, about a week ago. And, I can't remember exactly the exercises that he showed me. I wish I could share those, but, you know, really it comes back down to going really slow with the metronome and being conscious of your shifting in your hand. And there's a lot of things that I worked on when I was working on single string playing a lot, that I would do with my left hand shifting wise. So for example, Jens Krüger taught me this 3 notes per string scale. And so you're doing like a G major scale, starting on the G on the fourth string, fifth fret, and you're doing 3 notes per string. That's no exceptions. So you're going G, A, B, and you gotta get each of those notes clean. See my hand, how stretched out my hand is? And my thumb is back here. I don't know if you can see it, but it's like almost on the same side as my fingers. It's like not really in the middle, kind of almost on the same side as my fingers. And so I'm going 3 notes, and you can go thumb index if you want, but I'm just doing thumb, because we're focusing on left hand. Don't give yourself too much to digest. So we got that. And then when I move to the third string, I'm trying to make that movement as quiet, as subtle as possible. So it looks like I'm barring, but I'm not barring. I'm putting my index finger So you can hear all the strings. I'm not muting those strings. My pinky is pushing down, and I'm just dropping my finger down as smooth and small a movement as I can. And then bringing my index to the C. So that's gonna go 5-7-9, 5-7-9. See how smooth that transition is? Barely moving that. So you gotta go really slow to get that. And your pinky might not wanna do that. And that's okay. Like it takes time to get your pinky to do that. You could also do it out of this position, starting with your middle finger on that G note. But let's go back to three notes per string. So I've got 5-7-9, 5-7-9. And then this is where you're getting a shift in there, and that's important. So while my pinky finger is on that third string at the ninth fret, I'm gonna shift my whole hand. Is kind of, you see how that's moving up there? So I'm moving my index finger to that F sharp on the seventh fret, second string. And that's my first shift. And then my hand is in position. So like my thumb is back here, and then I'm moving, sliding it up with my index finger. And now my fingers are in position. And now you've got another shift, and that is 7, 8, 10. You've got another shift. See, I'm kind of squeezing my hand together to get my index finger. My index is going up to the ninth fret, first string. So we got 7, 8, 10 on the second string, and then shift 9, 10, 12. So we got that. That's a pretty significant shift. You're going up two frets. When my pinky's there, my hand is already moving to get there in time. Right? And then you got to do it down. It's opposite. So now I'm shifting my pinky. Shift the pinky. So that's a really, really great exercise, and there's variations on that too. So once more, and I'll show you one more variation after this. Once more, it's 5-7-9, 5-7-9 on the third. 7, that's a shift. 7, 8, 10 on the second. 9, 10, 12 on the first. 12, 10, 9, 10, 8, 7. And you can use your ears. We know what a major scale sounds like. And you can speed it up and ramp it up with the metronome, of course. Make sure you're using that metronome. And then a variation that I would do is in thirds. So you're going up a third and then back a second. So you're going, and that's the intervals that we're talking about, not the frets. So we got G, B, A, and then you're going back one. So bam, bam, and then A, C, and then B, D, C, E, D, F sharp. We're running out of time, so I'm aware of the clock, so I'm just gonna show you this one slowly so you can try and figure it out on your own. Do this after you've learned the actual major scale. Don't jump right into this thirds one. So we got. Yeah, so those are some, I mean, it'll kick your butt, but it will definitely get your hand in shape for doing those the shifts and getting your pinky close and your rest of your fingers close.
Yeah, those are great exercises. One thing to mention, I would say, if your hand hurts, though, it's not a no pain, no gain situation. Take a break.
Take a break, yeah. Take a break. Do a different exercise. You could, you know, like the one I was suggesting before. You know, that's a really good one. You can still do thirds with any scale. You know, and that's a little bit less intense on your left hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the banjo you're playing? That's a John Hartford banjo, but what you've been playing a little bit now, mm-hmm. and what do you like about this banjo? And how's it different than your more standard bluegrass banjo?
It's so light. Yeah. I love that part of it. That's just the first thing that popped into my mind. It's got a wooden tone ring. So, you know, it's going to be less bright, and the head's pretty tight right now. But I need to do some setup stuff to it because up the neck it buzzes in some points. But it's a really solid, warm and woody sounding instrument. It doesn't sound as like, there's not as many highs, I guess, as like, you know, I've got a Gibson PB4 conversion, and that one's like pretty bright. It's a walnut banjo. Mm-hmm. This one's just got this really nice warm sound. It's and it's not like really plunky, and I haven't tuned it down to F or E yet, but mm-hmm. it's not like a plunky sound. It's like still there and very present, and I really like that.
You're still getting a very crisp bluegrass tone.
Oh yeah, totally. And you know, I would probably loosen the head just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I just haven't yet, but I think that's it's at a G sharp, but I like my heads to be between a G and a G sharp, and so, but it's really, it's like when you get back to the bridge, it's not like it's brash, but it's still in that, it's got that like really sweet bluegrassy tone. You can dig in, you can really, you know, play some I don't know, play some hard driving bluegrass with it. It's a really versatile instrument I've found.
Cool. Yeah. And what finger picks are you using? Which one are you using right now?
The fingers? Yeah. I'm using the Pro Pick Heritages.
All right.
Heritages. And they're
what
awesome.
What do you like about them?
They're really, really close to the old Nationals that I've played. And I had a set of Oval 8 old Nationals, and they were great. Super warm sounding, mm-hmm. Very comfortable. And these are really close to that. I like these picks a lot. There's not a lot of pick noise. The comfort level is really high on these, like putting them on my fingers is easy. I don't have to adjust them a lot. The bands are nice. I don't know. I really like them. They're mellow sound, but you can also get close to the bridge and you don't hear a lot of scratching happening with them. They're good picks. I would highly recommend these.
Cool.
Yeah.
We have two questions, and what we're running a little short on time, but Victor C quickly says, what is your favorite instrument to pair with your banjo playing?
Oh, Victor, that is a good question. I've been experimenting a lot with chamber music and the banjo. So I've been writing a piece for woodwind quintet and banjo, and I've really enjoyed that. I got to workshop it last summer. And that was a really, really cool sound to hear the banjo with bassoon and flute and French horn and clarinet and oboe. That's just an amazing sound. So that's kind of my favorite right now. And I've been working on some string quartets with banjo, which, you know, Bela has done that. And Allison Brown has also done that. And that is a beautiful sound as well. But the woodwind quintet is really cool. I really like that.
Cool. And then Banjo, back to the Banjo Dan's question, quickly he's asking if you can share your setup to produce produce them. He says the Daily Banjo Lex videos.
Absolutely. So I'm using a Universal Audio Apollo interface into Logic, running a KM-184, Neumann KM-184 microphone into that. And I'll shoot like four or five licks at one time. If I'm really feeling it, I can shoot more than that, but usually it's four or five and then I need to take a break. And I have a light here that I use for it. And it's just like a photo light, I guess. And a Canon 70D that I use for the video. And what I'll do is I'll record the licks, I'll batch them out, I'll put the click track at the beginning of each lick that I need to record guitar to, or each song that I need to record guitar to. I'll record the guitar for the lick and the song, and that is all done on the KM184 as well. Mix it real quick, and I've got a kind of a template set up for that. Mix it, export it, edit it in iMovie, and then I'll edit it once more for Instagram and socials and the website. And I do that editing on another software online called Canva. And that's it.
Cool. Well, thank you for being here. Everybody, absolutely, go to dailybanjolicks.com and check out the lick. You'll get a lick every day, plus more on the site. And Jamie, do you want to jump in here fast and say anything? There you go.
Sure. Gavin, that was awesome. Really, really insightful. I was monitoring some of the guys up on Instagram as well. So welcome to everyone on Instagram today. That was awesome. No, that was great, man. Always a pleasure to have you on. And it's always like a really relaxed conversation. And yet, like, you come away learning more than you anticipated that you would be learning. Oh, so it's always a good time, as
so
it were.
So you have low expectations and I exceed those expectations. That's good.
No, I have higher expectations and then you still
and I exceed them all. Love it. So,
see what I did
well,
there?
Well, thanks. Yeah, you did it. It's a good setup.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that was really, really good fun.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that was great for me too. Thanks for having me. And thanks everybody for showing up and your comments and questions. That was cool.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again. I feel like this conversation probably could have gone on for a second hour.
I could have kept going on. Yeah, we could do an extended one. Yeah,
let's set up a new, you know, a big one, and right, see what we can get going for sure. Yeah, so, sure. you want to play us out a little something? Say goodbye.
Yeah, sure. I'll see if I can get through this new one that I've been working on. Also, is untitled, but we'll see. See what happens.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. We'll see you on the next episode. And Bennett, again, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Absolutely. And definitely more discussions to be had. So we look forward to that.
Absolutely. Me too.
All right, man.
Thanks.